Welcome, everyone. Will you please pray with me? Oh, Heavenly Father, Divine Mother,
Beloved
Jesus Christ,
Blessed Master,
Dearest Mother, Saints and sages of all religions, I bow to all of you. Free my life from all obstacles. And give me physical, mental, and spiritual development. Make my mind thy temple. Make my heart thy altar. Make my love thy home. Be thou the only king. Reigning on the throne of my consciousness. Reading from Swami Ramdas tonight, Sadhana in a Capsule Form. Papa writes in a letter to a devotee, if you want to walk on the divine path, you ought to regulate the conduct of your life in such a way that you might gradually maintain in your thoughts a consciousness of the great truth dwelling in you and pervading everywhere. Useless frittering away of energy, especially mental, must be controlled. By a steady process of concentration on the great ideal alone, you can resist the attacks of worries and anxieties. Keep the goal of perfect peace ever dazzling in front of your mental vision. A retrospection and a persevering attempt to enter into the higher and exalted consciousness of your being will enable you to raise an invincible power within yourself, so that you can wield the internal and external forces to your best advantage. Realize that you are the immortal and all-blissful spirit, and not merely a body, which is only an ephemeral mask assumed by the spirit for its play. Dive deep within yourself to know the secret and eternal source of your existence. The way to success, peace, and power lies in this direction. Scripture reading comes from the Bible, John chapter 1:1-18. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. The same was in the beginning with God. All things were made by Him, and without Him was not anything made that was made. In Him was life, and the life was the light of men. And the light shineth in the darkness, and the darkness comprehended it not. There was a man sent from God, whose name was John. The same came for a witness, to bear witness of the light, that all men through him might believe. He was not that light, but he was sent to bear witness of the light. That was the true light, which lighteth every man that cometh into the world. He was in the world, and the world was made by him, and the world knew him not. He came unto his own, and his own received him not. But as many as received him, to them he gave the power to become the sons of God, even to them that believe on his name, which were born not of blood, nor the will of the flesh, nor the will of man, but of God. And the Word was made flesh and dwelt among us, and we beheld his glory. The glory is the only begotten of the Father, full of grace and truth. John bare witness of him, and cried, saying, this was he of whom I spake. He that cometh after me is preferred before me, for he was before me. And of his fullness have all we received, and grace for grace. For the law was given by Moses, but grace and truth came by Jesus Christ. No man hath seen God at any time. The only begotten Son, which is in the bosom of the Father, he hath declared him. reading from John is one of my favorite. John, of all the Gospels, is more metaphysical and describes the cosmology of the creation, not only of the universe, but of all of us, of all mankind. Meher Baba once said a wonderful thing. He said that from the very inception of the cosmos, that the very makeup of the atoms and the protons, the electrons, that man was the ultimate and inevitable outcome of all creation. Now, why mankind particularly? It is because we are uniquely suited in our astral body with the ability to enter into cosmic consciousness. It is said by the great yogic traditions and all great religions that man is uniquely suited to this. He has the sixth center wherein he may enter into Christ consciousness. He has the seventh center, the Sahasrara, wherein he might enter into the great universal being of his own consciousness. In each one of us, there is an Atman, that is, a soul. That soul is pure, it is unstained, and it is not marred by anything that we do in mind or through word or through deed. That pure, stainless soul resides within every man who enters into this world. And that is the light that is within all men, the firstborn of every creature. It is the light that is within you. But when we close these two eyes and enter into our secret closet and meditation, we oftentimes, in the beginning, only see darkness. We do not see that light. It is through deepened concentration, a deepened focus upon the infinite nature of our own soul, that we awaken those inner centers. This is not imagination. Imagination plays a very real and important role in all humankind. But this internal experience that is awakened within the consciousness comes as a reality that is self-evident, self-illuminating. When you enter into this inner closet and you enter into the darkness of your own inner consciousness, I sometimes think of it as entering into a theater. And in that theater, the lights are darkened, the movie is about to run, but we sit in darkness. We're waiting, we're expectant, we anticipate the coming of something new, the something of awakening within our soul. But unless we pay attention, unless we stay within the inner theater of our own consciousness, we stay awake and alert, then we will not see the inner movie unfolding. And what is the nature of that inner movie? It is the sound of God that comes in the various sounds of the chakras and ultimately comes as the sound of the Om. It is a very high-pitched sound. It's similar, I think, it's described in the Bible as being the sound of many rushing waters. And it is as if you are walking through the woods and you hear the sound of rapids or a waterfall from a great distance, and you first hear that very high-pitched sound penetrating through the woods as the water first comes in that form. And so you may hear it in your right ear or behind in the medulla. You can also hear it, of course, in the left ear, or just as a pervasive sound that has no particular point of origin. It is through that sound current, if we allow our mind to dwell on it, that the consciousness will begin to expand. It's like a wave that takes the mind with it. And as you allow your mind to expand with the consciousness, not trying to force it in any way, just simply listening to it and expanding the mind, letting it stretch out over the reaches of inner space, and your consciousness will expand and expand. Many times in these inner awakenings, we don't even recognize the difference between our ordinary waking consciousness and an uplifted state of consciousness. This is because as we enter into these inner states, they seem so natural, so much a part of us, that there are times when we doubt our own experience, or we doubt that we've achieved anything real. We think perhaps it was imagination. We should take that as a challenge of truth. This path is a path of truth. It is a path of realized experience. We shouldn't rest satisfied with some theories, some ideas about how things are. It is fine to take on a philosophy. It is fine to think on these things. But that gets us very little in terms of spiritual advancement. It's like finding directional pointers that will point us in the right direction, but we still have to walk the path. We can't be satisfied with those arrows. We have to be focused on moving along on the path, moving ahead spiritually. Because we are always creating with this mind. Every thought is a creation. Because we are made in the exact form of our Creator, so within us lies this perfect spark of light, the Atman. Out of that comes the mental force, the thought force of the causal body. From the causal, if we quicken it with the energy of the astral being, we then bring into material creation. And so we are replicating how the divine created this whole vast cosmos within our small human sphere. We are constantly creating. But our thoughts are so important, as Papa Ram Dass pointed out in this reading tonight. Our thoughts are critical. It is like when I played football in high school, and we had this one particular kind of movement called a head shuck. And when the lineman came at you, you took your forearm and you hit him as hard as you could in his head with your forearm. And the theory was that wherever the head went, the body followed. Well, inevitably it proved true that if you move the head to one direction, the body went and followed in that same path. That is very true of our own thoughts. When we focus our attention on anything, the whole rest of our being follows along with it. It is the directional rudder for this ship. And wherever we steer ourselves with our thoughts, there we go. Whatever we let these thoughts habitually rest upon, that is what we create. And that is why it's so important to fill our minds with high-mindedness, with thoughts of God constantly going in our mind. Because when we focus our mind in that way, we get peace, we get happiness, we get upliftment of mind and soul. When we allow our thoughts to dwell on the negative, on what's wrong, either with us or with other people, that is also leading us into a direction. We move into that world, the world of criticism, the world of negativity. And we surround ourselves with that. It's like a dark cloud begins to enter in our aura. When people are very, very depressed, they have no energy, they have no hope, they have no anticipation of being able to get out of that condition. And it is like a very heavy fog has entered around them. They can't see the world, they can't see anything good. And this is a result of either present-day thoughts or past thought associations that have suddenly erupted into the mind. And there we are, we're stuck with it. But we can change all of that. We can change ourselves. We can change ourselves through our thoughts and the habitual way that we think about things. If we take a positive mode in this life, if you begin to look at the best in other people, in yourself, and to bring that best out, then you will get the very best results coming to you. You know, this world is made up of mixed nature. It always has been, and it always will. Jesus said it in this way. He says, you will always have the poor with you. You can focus on the poor, or you can focus on that Christ light that is within you, and that is within each person that you meet. we can take it in the beginning as an article of faith, that this light is burning bright within the heart of each person. It is the supreme power in the universe, and that when it wishes to awaken itself within any individual, there is no power on earth that can stop it. That is true of you and me and all people. And so when you see that all-powerful light residing within the heart of each person you meet, you are adding to the light that exists within their heart already. You are giving power to the good within them. If they have negative trains of thought, by you focusing upon the positive, you can help to encourage them to think along those positive lines. When you see people, there are all kinds of reasons to criticize them within your own mind. You can find all kinds of faults with other people. But what is better, what is higher, what is closer to your own divine nature is to see that pure light burning within them, to find the good that is within them, to identify it, to bring it out. And in that way, we can help each other to grow in the spiritual light and consciousness. It is so easy, due to our past habits, to become focused on what is negative and what is wrong. What is wrong with ourselves? What is wrong with this world? How can people be so stupid as to behave that way? And sometimes we look at the world and we think that. Nevertheless, it is God that is residing within each one of those forms. It is God who is the supreme power of the universe and has put this entire universe and all the beings that are within it into motion. You see, the greatest recipient of your thoughts is yourself first. And when we think in negative ways, when our mind constantly returns back to that, that adds just this dark brick onto our consciousness each time we do it. Each time we do it. It's very mathematical, if you want to put it that way, that each time we add a thought, it's putting another creation within our own being. Relationships are also built by how we think about other people. So many people come with troubled relationships, and it is because that we have focused upon the negative that is within the other person. The other person in kind focuses on the negative that is within us. And so the consciousness goes down and down and down. The anger, the resentment, the hopelessness, all builds into a negative tamasic state. We can free ourselves by unilateral action. That is, we choose to act in a higher road, in a higher path, regardless of what the other person does. So many relationships are built on a quid pro quo basis. You do this for me, and I'll do that for you. We're like merchants who are making trades in the social spheres. And yet, when we do that, we tie ourselves, our own evolution and our own consciousness, to the other person. If the other person behaves badly, we react badly back to them. So their actions are dictating our actions. And around it goes. And when one person withholds or behaves badly towards one person and the other person responds with that, you tie yourselves together in this negative tamasic state. And the consciousness is dragged further down and spiritual progress is retarded. So many of the problems that we see in the world are these angers towards people of other ethnicities, of other religions. And it's all based upon, you did me wrong. And so I'm going to do you wrong twice, just to teach you a good lesson. And it just starts a dance that keeps it going for ad infinitum, if people choose to. So we must act unilaterally. We must be the first ones to take action towards the light. And unless we're willing to do that, We will not break the cycle, and we will continue on in this dance with other individuals until the whole society is taken down and degraded into a terrible state. In order to change that, in order to rectify that, we take ourselves by our hand, a very firm hand, and we say, I'm going to change. Every time a negative thought enters into my mind, I'm going to change it into something positive. Every time a criticism comes into my mind, I'm going to think of some positive attribute for that other person. I'm going to change the train of this mind. I'm going to train it until it responds to me, until I have mastery over it, until this subconscious pattern that keeps repeating itself is completely dead and gone, and what it is replaced with is something beautiful, something powerful, something of light, something of upliftment. And then we are a blessing to ourselves and to all people who are around us. This is the only way that this world will change. So many people are looking for some magical answer, some messiah to come into the world, some avatar to come into the world to whip people into shape, to get other people to act right. Doesn't happen that way. We've had avatars. We've had wonderful souls, uplifting souls. But this is not how the world changes. The world changes as a result of individual decisions. And those individual decisions collectively uplift or degrade this world. So we must change our thoughts first. And when we see God's hand behind every action, everything that happens, then our world begins to change. We lose fear. We lose negativity. We lose hatred. Because we are charged with that divine light and force within our consciousness, within our words, within our actions. And when we lose fear and we're totally focused upon God and the light, then we win harmony, happiness, peace. And as Master used to say, being a smile millionaire. There's a wonderful little story of a mother who was waiting at home for her child, a small child, walking home from school one day. This terrible lightning storm hit all of a sudden. She was very worried about her son, and he seemed to be a little bit later than usual. So she decided to get into the car and go and find him and see where he was at. She was driving between the house and the school, and there she saw him walking along. And every once in a while, these brilliant flashes of lightning would erupt from the sky. And the little boy would just stop, and he'd look up, and he'd just have this great big smile on his face. He seemed to be thoroughly enjoying himself. She really was wondering what was going on in his mind. She was quite frightened for him. So she pulled up and rolled down the window, and she says, what are you doing? Why do you keep stopping and looking up into the sky and smiling? He says, well, God keeps on taking my picture, so I want to smile so that I look nice. So seeing God within every action, within everything that happens within life. And when you do that, you smile. And when you smile, you bring a radiance of light to yourself and to others. Be a blessing to life. Be a blessing to yourself. You are an agent of the divine life and intelligence of which you are a part, that Atman that was the spawn of the Paramatman, the great supreme Atman, soul of the universe. You have divine origins. Don't act like a pauper. Don't act like a beggar. Don't act like someone who is convinced that they will never win, that they do everything wrong. Proclaim your sonship of God. Proclaim that you have divine origins. You are the king. Proclaim that divine spark that is within you. Look past your own faults even. Look past your own negative thoughts. And establish yourself in yourself, your true self, your great self, that is beyond thoughts. You know, your thoughts change all the time. How can you be your thoughts? People put so much value onto thoughts, and yet thoughts are constantly changing. We change our mind. We change our perspective. And so we evolve, we change, but you cannot be your thoughts. And other people put such a high value on their emotions. But emotions change. At one moment you're happy, another you're sad, another time you're angry. And on it goes. And so you cannot be your emotions. You feel emotions, you have emotions, but you are not those emotions. You think thoughts. You have thoughts, but you are not those thoughts. And your body changes. Every day you have a different body. Every 7 years, it is said, our cells are replaced throughout our body, and we have a new body. We're constantly creating in this body, and it's constantly changing. And so you cannot be this body. Who is it within? What is that indwelling presence that is awake, that is conscious, through which intelligent thoughts flow, through which emotions flow, through which sensations of the body flow and are received and are witnessed? You are the Ancient One. You are the Divine Eternal. And yet, how do we act? How do we perceive ourselves? These little tiny bodies spinning on this little mud ball, the earth, going through space. And we see it as all important. But your divine origins is what is all important. To remember that, to become imbued in your mind with that, to seek out that radiance, that happiness, that joy, that upliftment, that bliss. That is your real nature. Do not be satisfied with paltry substitutes, but learn to dive deep into meditation. Learn to focus upon the positive and uplifting aspects of your mind. Learn to change your life and let it reflect the divine origin of which you are already a part. You do not have to create it. You do not have to become good. You are good. You do not have to create light. You are that light. Receive it to all them who received him. Gave he power to become sons of God. You are that. You are that. So to reside in your true self, your true consciousness, put into proper perspective this body, these emotions, these thoughts. No longer let them dominate you, but rather become the master of them through your own identification with the light that is within you. And you will gain unceasing happiness and joy. Upliftment and bliss that is ever new. All of our sensory experiences wax and wane with the day, but the bliss of your consciousness comes in ever new patterns, ever pleasing, ever uplifting. All people seek out bliss. They do it through different ways. This world is one vast experimental laboratory of human experience, looking for the key to happiness and divine bliss. But when we get upon the spiritual path, we have created the right theory. We have pointed the mind in the right direction. And through that directional pointer, we will find that we will gain in happiness. We do have to face ourselves. We have to face those things that we did in our outgoing voyage from that divine consciousness. So there is some difficulties. It is not like you turn your mind that way and it all just automatically falls into place. We have to pay the price. But in paying that price, the price is paid and we are done with it. And then we can move on in complete freedom. There is no words to describe the divine love and bliss that is our true nature. Many of us have tasted of that. But then the weight of worldly gravity draws us back down to material-mindedness once again. And those uplifting experiences seem almost as if they were a dream. Not quite real, ephemeral. But that is your true origin and your true nature. And if you make the effort to reverse this life force from always being in the world to being into your internal nature, you will come into that wonderful, blissful existence. I guarantee it. The prophets, the sages, the wonderful masters of all time have guaranteed it. Stop there and see if there's any questions about your own sadhana.
There are times when I'm meditating where I can hear this fountain of thoughts welling up,
mm-hmm.
where my mind is, I'm still in a sense that I mm-hmm. can see it and I'm detached from the thoughts. But mm-hmm. they seem to be coming up mm-hmm. involuntarily.
Yes.
Like I have no power, like there's this mm-hmm. other entity in my mind.
Yes.
And I can, you know, sort of hold it back or divert it, but then mm-hmm. it'll just come right back again.
Mm-hmm.
And you say we have control, but it doesn't appear that way sometimes.
If we maintain our separateness, then we will detach from that and the thoughts will dissipate. They'll go away. It doesn't happen right away all the time. There's a certain momentum to our thoughts. There's a certain motion that we ourselves have set into motion. And if you were to be on a large, fast-going ship of some kind and you wanted to stop all of a sudden, you can't just stop. Just, okay, I want to stop right now. You first have to cut the power. And when you cut the power, your momentum is going to continue to carry you a certain distance. So we ourselves empower thoughts by giving them our attention. If you focus more deeply on that still place, the witness that is watching those thoughts, and turn the mind in, thoughts can be there, let them go by, but become more engrossed, become more full with that stillness that's behind the thoughts, then you're starving those thoughts of being fed and they will eventually dissipate and completely disappear. And when they do, you'll enter into that great stillness, which there are no thoughts. And even sensations of the body are cut off and you're just in that complete stillness. But don't worry about the thoughts. See, if we actually get into kind of a tug-of-war with them, a competition, we're actually giving them power. Because we're putting, oh, those darn thoughts, they're back again. And just the moment we do that, we've given power to those thoughts. So it's difficult sometimes not to make an enemy out of these things. You know, I want to put my attention over here, and the moment I do, it's drawn back over here. And to be successful in it, we just bring the attention back. We focus on what's positive. If you feel a little ray of light, a little bit of stillness inside, just get curious about that stillness. Focus your whole attention on that stillness. Let the thoughts come and go as they want. Don't give them any power at all. And then they'll dissipate and die down. Fine-tuning the process, huh? Because we get inside and these things come up and we just, what do I do? What do I do? And really the main thrust is to keep the mind going back to God constantly, wherever you find that at. Wherever you find that. wherever you find that out. And it can be just a little whisper of some peace or some joy. Or, you know, we want to define and tell God how to come to us. You know, you can only come to us as this incredible experience of light and bliss and all the rest of it. And when we start entering into these higher realms, we just move into these wonderful places. And we just want them to continue on and on. The moment we reach out and we try to grab that experience and say, oh, this is what I want. I want this peace, or I want this bliss. I want it to stay just like this. We've just choked the life force that supplies it, and it just starts ebbing away from us. In order to remain in that, we have to remain open-handed. We can't be grasping. We're just witnessing. We're just aware. And keeping our mind on what helped bring that experience toward us in the first place. And that is just our meditation, becoming quiet, becoming still inside, watching our thoughts, and watching our desire nature wanting to reach out and grab that. Just say, oh, that's interesting. That's what I want to do. And so we can't dictate how God comes to us. So sometimes it just comes in a little tiny whisper. And then, of course, the mind gets in there and chatters. Well, maybe this isn't real. Maybe I'm just imagining this. Or, you know, anybody who gets a little bit quiet, they'd have this same kind of thing. It doesn't mean anything. And on goes the mind. It never wants to stop its chatter. So it's just a matter of, oh, look at what the mind is doing now. It's chattering away. It's doubting this experience. Why I'm in the middle of it. If you go with that, it takes you out of the experience. If you observe that, then it allows you to separate a little bit from it. In order to observe you, I have to experience, in the physical sense, some separation from you. There has to be a subject and an object. When you are trying to divorce yourself from I am my thoughts, or I am my feelings, or I am this body, once you become a witness to this body, or these emotions, or these thoughts, you've just created a little separation there. You've created a little subject and object that you are no longer perfectly identified with that. And that is a little space there that you can cultivate. And that's where you start feeling that sense of peace, because once you step back from I am the body, I am the emotions, I am these thoughts, you get some stillness, you get some peace. So just focus on that.
Yeah, I felt that peace. It's a strange feeling. It's like this TV in the room that you can't shut off. Like,
yeah.
You're still feeling peace.
So just focus on the peace. Let your mind dwell on that peace. And even though the thoughts are there, you don't want to go out and identify with those thoughts. So you just like let those go. And you just stay. What's that?
Don't pick up the remote.
Start switching channels, or trying to switch channels. So just become more focused on the peace. And as you cut off the life force supply from those thoughts, they'll dissipate and disappear all of their own. Doesn't happen in a day, but we've been creating them for far longer than a day. So. But it begins to happen. And when you have those states and you have those stillnesses and that peace come in, just stretch that out. Just, you know, stay in that and allow the mind to dwell in that. And think of God within your heart, who is desiring to awaken himself in you, and that he is doing all of the work. It's a wonderful story about a poor man one time, and the king had gone out on a hunting party near this man's house, and he had gotten separated from the hunting party, gotten quite lost. He was dressed in his hunting clothes, so he wasn't looking all that regal. He was just looking in like an average person that day. So he got quite thirsty, very weak, and he came upon this peasant's house, and this peasant gave him wonderful comfort. He gave him something to drink, what food he had, he shared with him everything. So the king then became reunited with his hunting party and went home. He says, I really want to thank this man. So he sent out an envoy and he says that the king is going to come in order to personally thank you for giving him all these sharing of whatever you had with him. The peasant said, no, the king can't come here. Yeah, look at this. I just live in this little hut and I have nothing and I can't receive a king. He's just totally embarrassed and humiliated by the thought that the king would come there. The envoy said, never mind. The king will send everything. So the king sent carpenters, he sent materials, he sent, made this beautiful home for him, and then put in carpets and furniture and everything befitting the reception of a king. And when everything was ready, then the king came. And the same is true within you. We feel like we're inadequate. Oh, you know, how could God could ever come into this temple? I know me. You know, I know my thoughts. I know my weaknesses. I know who I am. But when we feel that God himself is preparing the way, doing everything for us, constructing this body temple in such a way that it can receive him, this astral temple in such a way that it can manifest the life energy and tremendous consciousness, the causal body, so that these universal thoughts can come in and that they can be contained within this consciousness, and that the infinite divine spirit is doing that inside of you. It's taking care of every detail, taking you exactly where you ought to go, surrounding you with exact right people when you need them. And you completely trust in that and reside in that. You see, you take your mind off of yourself and you put it onto the divine. And when you do that, you create a connection with the divine. And that has tremendous potential and power in it. So it's a great practice is to see through every aspect of yourself and see the divine behind it. And every person that you meet, that is God in human form coming to you. And you look for it. You see it. And then the world turns into just this wonderful play. And you feel as if sometimes you have literally walked onto a stage. And here's our stage, and here's all the actors. And we're sitting in this room. Many people have their eyes closed. And we're all in the play together. And we're all here to love each other and to nurture each other and to help each other to grow. And the more that we're focused on that, the more that consciousness becomes real in our lives. And then we take that out and we spread it to our families and to our community, and it just reaches out and out and out and out, and goes out. And that's how this world becomes changed. Master used to say, change yourself, and you'll change thousands. But the divine is doing the changing. Part of where we get caught up is we perceive ourselves as the doer. And when we do that, we get caught up with tension, anxiety. Will I do this right? Will it come out right? Everything becomes focused on me, me, me. But when we see that it's God who's the doer within us, the divine intelligence, the divine power within us is awakening itself. It's doing everything to prepare the way for the coming of the king. Then our focus is only on the king. Oh, when will the king come? When will he make this temple ready? This body temple. When will it become a fit instrument for his consciousness? And we're not worried about our faults. We're worried about this perfecting of ourselves in order to become a fit temple to receive that divine light and intelligence. And you see, then we become, the divine just becomes our all and all and all. And when we do that, then we have the divine. He can't resist us. Whatever we think upon, whatever we act upon, whatever we speak upon, creates a magnetism within us. And it draws people and circumstances to us. And that's why the power of thought is so important. If we allow negativity to take over our life, we draw that to us and we say, see? Look at how the world's behaving here. It's matching my expectations. Well, of course it is. That's what we drew to ourselves. conversely, when we put our mind upon the divine, we draw that to ourselves. And when we put our mind upon realization, we draw all those life circumstances to us that will perfectly be tailor-made for us to take us into that divine consciousness. When we trust in that, when we have faith in that, when we know that, then we lose all worry, all fear, all anxiety, and we can just reside in that divine consciousness. Even while it perfects us, we can feel that bliss, that peace, that joy. Isn't that wonderful? And that is the Savior consciousness that is within you. You don't have to create it. It's already there. It's already there. The light is burning within you right now as powerfully as it ever has been, as powerfully as it ever will. The only difference is in our conscious comprehension of that light. And so the light is infinite of nature within you right now. And you need not do anything to improve it, make it bigger, only to consciously open yourself to it. So this life is very joyful. Especially when we find what our real purpose is for being here. That is the key to everything. When we know that our real purpose is for realization, then it puts everything into place.
I had a question in the kind of the opening up and searching for the stillness. Is that something you should be trying to do actually while during Kriya, or is that something that you focus on something else during Kriya itself and then open yourself up to that in the meditation afterward? Mm-hmm. How do those interface?
Of course, the Kriya, you're focused on the Kriya technique and circulating the life force around the spine and the brain as you do that. And so your whole attention is on that. But then afterwards comes that stillness. And Babaji once was quoted as saying that people who practice Kriya and then don't meditate in that stillness afterwards, it's like working to prepare a meal and then not bothering to eat it. So when you put your whole attention into the Kriya technique and then afterwards feel for that stillness, feel for that peace, and reside in that. Just be in that. That's this, if we put our whole attention and our full focus on that Kriya, then we will feel that awakening within the spine. And we'll feel a greater sense of stillness. And so we should... The thought came to me one time that I want to make every Kriya breath a perfect breath, as perfectly as I can do it. And so my whole attention was just on that one Kriya breath. I just wanted to make that as perfect and as whole as I possibly could. When we do that with every one of them, then we bring ourselves into that still state. And then we can just reside in that. And you can choose to continue to do Hong Sa if the mind is still active, or just reside in that stillness and that peace. Either one is fine. Mm-hmm. Some people get very focused on, I want more Kriyas, I want more repetitions. And Babaji once said that for some people, out of many hundreds of Kriyas, they do one right. So I think if we really focus on doing one right, you know, and the one that we're doing right in that moment is the one that we're going to do one right. And we do every one of that with that full attention and focus. We will get the results. There's no problem there.
I'll allow myself one mulligan per session,
huh? we find the mind wanders or, you know, whatever. But it's wonderful practice to bring. Feel that whole your whole consciousness is centered in your spine and your brain, and it's in the rotation with the Kriya breath. Just feel that that's your whole being, your whole sense of self is there. Then your mind can't wander.
Started on the path, I was better at doing.
Oh, certainly.
Described. And then as time has gone on, I get more mulled in or whatever, you know. Just, but I was very focused on each breath, and you know, really concentrating. Mm-hmm. Better in the beginning, and then it's harder now than it was.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we get into the work of it. You know, we have a certain honeymoon period, and you know, sometimes if you say go bowling for the first time, and you don't care, and you don't know how what you're doing, and you roll a strike or a really nice spare, oh wow. I'm pretty good at this, you know, is what the mind thinks and the ego. So then it really works hard, and after that you have nothing but gutters. The harder you see yourself as the doer, then you get more caught up in the whole ego of it. And that's where the Zen masters have the beginning mind. You're always a beginner. Every day you're a beginner. Today, I'm just a beginner. I'm brand new. I'm the new kid on the block.
Well, I still feel like that.
And then you allow yourself to enter into it in that brand new kind of state. You're not comparing yourself with some other time or some other place or some high standard. You're fully present, because that notion that I am the doer takes us out of the doing. It takes us out of that role of the witness. And we identify with the role rather than being a witness to the role. And then we just get more muddled and confused and mucked up. So if every day we just think, I'm a beginner today. I'm starting out brand new. And then it is brand new. One of the real problems in our life can be that the mind gets into a rut. Well, it's another day. Well, this day is filled with potential, infinite potential. This moment is. But because our mind becomes so inculcated with, it's another day, it's the same thing, I'm surrounded by the same thing, it's the same routine, we numb ourselves into an unconscious state. And we're not aware of the infinite potential that exists within each one of us, each moment. And so to become awake, and Sat Chit Ananda Chit is awake, it is consciousness, it's being aware. And so the very definition of God is awake, aware. And to be aware of what? To be aware of the eternal self, Sat. And to be aware of Ananda, bliss. It is our nature. And each moment that we exist unaware of that eternal self and that eternal bliss, we are in ignorance. And our first order of business should be to get out of ignorance, to become awake, to become aware. And really it is the intensity of our own thoughts, the purposefulness of our own life, and our own actions and our own words. But we take life too much of a cavalier attitude. And we don't take ourselves seriously enough in the fact that we are divine in nature. We don't really believe it. Even when the mind holds it as an idea, we don't really believe it. And if we did, we would awaken to our divine nature in this moment and be ever awake in it. So I've thrown down the gauntlet. We have our closing prayer. O Heavenly Father,
Divine Mother,
I feel the wonder and the beauty
of Thy glorious presence
in every part of my being.
My heart is bursting with my love for Thee.
I kneel in adoration at Thy feet.
And surrender myself to Thee.
I feel the power of Thy perfection.
Surging in every cell of my body.
My mind and my intelligence.
Are radiant with Thy healing light.
My soul is filled with the ecstasy and bliss.
Of my communion with Thee.
I and my Father are one.
Blessed Spirit, I am He. Infinite Divine's blessings ever be upon you, awakening that light within your own heart and letting it shine upon all equally, bringing light and love and upliftment to this world. Be it so.